Xavi. He's done it. Four. Balotelli. Aguero. Cahill. Cahill. Tim Cahill has done it again. What a goal by Tim Cahill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Premier League Nightclub podcast. My name is Damon, and with me, I have the Woodrow. Woody, it is probably the biggest week slash fortnight in Premier League Nightclub history, and I know we amp this up every few weeks when we have a few good guests, but I think given the circumstances of football returning and absolutely everything else, this has to be it. Mate, this has to be the biggest we've ever been.
It has to be the biggest, and Damo, don't overshadow the fact that this is actually our 50th episode that we're publishing. So the six minis.
It is.
This is episode 44. So it brings us to a tally of 50. We've hit the half century, and we are going about this half century in some bloody style, Damo. We got a pretty big guest, to say the least, coming on. And do you want to maybe tell everyone what it is if they haven't cottoned on yet?
Well, basically, what's happening is we're getting Matt Bloody Jarvis on the pod. That's how freaking massive it is. Would you say that, like, the process of getting him onto the show hasn't been that far different to sort of how we've gone about the other guests? It sort of just fell our way a little bit. And we've also had a few other podcasts sort of message us since we've posted the story, hyping it up over the last day or two about how we got it done. And basically, just like a shout out to Matt, and obviously we're going to thank him when he comes on as well. But, like, this is pretty big, yeah. Like, you know, we're not going through the proper media channels that, you know, your broadcasters and such go through. So to help out the nightclub, for every guest we've ever had on, including Matt, just massive. Absolutely massive.
Completely. And Damo, I know we definitely talked about this a lot off air, and we did also with a lot of our mates as well, that we are the Premier League nightclub. We live and breathe the Premier League, you and I, and Sammy on occasion as well, right? And so for us to finally have a chat to a Premier League star, albeit maybe at the end of his career, but nonetheless, the stuff that this man has done in the Premier League, let alone debuted for England, he has an England cap, Damo. This is just such a reward for us. And honestly, and I think it's such a reward for our listeners, our loyal listeners. We have such a huge listener base, and this is exactly what we wanted to give you guys, a Premier League star, an England international, Matt Jarvis.
Mate, it's going to be massive, but you did mention the England cap, and it's something that, you know, other than this podcast, is obviously his greatest achievement. And this whole England cap, it comes with a sense of honour, you know, pride. You wear it with pride when you put on that shirt, and Woody, I know you do want to touch on that with Matt himself, but there are some people on planet Earth that see the England shirt as potentially, you know, put themselves in a position of power. And our good mate, Kyle Walker, has probably had a few interesting... Well, he's had an interesting life, to be honest, an incredibly interesting life, and which is something caught our eye during the week before we get stuck into the interview with Matt. And I think it sort of has to be mentioned, and we're going to have to be delicate with how we approach this. I know, Woody, you're sort of giving me the eyes right now, but, I mean, what sort of happened here? It's real ordinary stuff.
Mate, it seems like... It seems like isolation just hits some people harder than most. And it's definitely happened with Kyle Walker. He has found himself in probably one of the stickiest situations I've ever heard of, really, and probably degraded himself to a point that we didn't think was even possible. And Damo, we talked about it. We said, you know, clearly Kyle Walker living his high life, and we didn't realize the bloke has a wife. When he actually had his...
And has a history.
He has a peppered history, actually. And put it this way, unfortunate event with the miso means that, unfortunately, they had a miscarriage of the baby. But the next day, Kyle Walker went and had an orgy that cost him £3,600. So, look, I don't know. And if he wasn't wearing an England shirt, or he was not wearing a City shirt or a Tottenham shirt, you'd have to seriously question what sort of life this bloke would lead.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the phrase I put to you. It was like, you'd really wonder what some of these blokes would get up to if they weren't good at kicking a ball around. That's definitely the case for Kyle Walker. But speaking of sex icons, Woodrow.
Here we go.
Mia Khalifa as well. Little shout out to the Down Under. And you know, she absolutely loves the Aussies, doesn't she? Mm. And again, she's at it again this week. She released a fantasy team, Matty Ryan, an Aaron Mooy feature. She absolutely loves us, and her compliments don't just stop at the footballing ability. They talk about how we're nice guys, and you know, for all the Aussies listening, I think Aussie guys listening at least, I think this is a nice representation of Australian males.
Oh, completely. And I think Damon, to be honest with you, it has just dawned on me. Mia Khalifa is obviously a huge West Ham fan. Is she potentially a Premier League nightclub fan? And could she be a Premier League nightclub guest?
Oh, mate, this is another genuine option. Like, genuine option.
This is massive. This is massive. And you know what? Put a rain check on this one, Damon. It's going to happen. Mia Khalifa coming on the pod. Regarding Aaron Mooy, it's interesting because he probably represents one of her co-stars. And it's no secret that Aaron Mooy is a man of many trade. Obviously, he's called the Ball Jesus down here in Australia. And they're obviously... Mia works with many bald men, obviously the likes of Johnny Sins, just to name one off the top of my head. But yeah, I think honestly,
just the one.
Just the one. I don't really know too many others. I don't know if I can say he's a sex icon, but I know for a fact Matty Jarvis has done a few topless photo shoots. Particularly one for Attitude magazine, and his wife was getting a few calls whether or not he may be gay or not. And it's funny.
No way.
Dead set. I honestly read this article before we hopped into the interview, and apparently a lot of people were questioning Matty Jarvis's sexuality because he's got a rig, mate. He's got a bit of a washboard effect about the...
You can't be serious, and you cannot be mentioning this when he comes
in. I'll have to negate this, and unfortunately probably when he listens back, he's going to hear this. But nonetheless, Matty Jarvis probably considered to be a bit of a sex icon himself. I mean, it's fair to say. He's got a rig on him.
For sure. And I think with that unbelievable introduction, you know, just on his body, aside from his achievements and accomplishments in the game, I reckon it's good timing to bring him on. So, without further ado, is it time to get on the former West Ham, Norwich, Wolves and England superstar down here at the nightclub?
Mate, it definitely is. And what a privilege this is, Damo. Let's get stuck straight into it. And we've got on the line, of course, our first ever Premier League star on the Premier League nightclub. It is Matt Jarvis, the ex-England international, West Ham, Norwich, Walsall man. Matt, how are you doing?
I am very well. Thank you very much.
Oh, that is good to hear. And honestly, it is such a privilege just before we get started for Damon and myself, because we've been operating as a podcast, I guess, for the last year almost now, and this is actually our 50th episode.
Can't believe it's been a year.
I know, it's a bit scary, and you're the first EPL man or ex-EPL man that we've ever got onto the pod, and honestly, this is like reaching the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's just so sweet to finally have an ex-APL man on the pod. But firstly, we'll just sort of get stuck into it as well. How's ISO trading? Obviously, we're coming out of it now, but how's it sort of going for you?
It's interesting. I think for me, like I've just had a daughter who's 13 weeks old, so she's been pretty much born into this whole isolation lockdown situation. So I've got a 3.5-year-old boy and a newborn daughter. So I've never been in this situation before. Like when I had my son, I had 2 days off and then I was straight back into training and that was it. So I missed a lot of that when he was born, but obviously I've been every single minute of every single day. So it's been amazing. At the same time, it's definitely hard work. We've been trying to do a little bit of schooling with my 3.5-year-old, which is interesting. But he's certainly keeping me fit, because I'm trying to fit in as much fitness and keep myself ticking over as I possibly can. But I've got 3 dogs and 2 kids and a wife that's it's quite hard to fit it all in every single day.
Yeah, I think Woody would know me best by how much I've complained about having 1 dog in my house for the past few weeks. So I can't begin to imagine
what you've been going through. puts me to shame, to be honest. Just on, obviously, we're going to get stuck into so much about your career and how you got into the game growing up. But I just wanted to probably hit the nail on the head in terms of our own podcast. And that's like obviously talking a bit from an Australian perspective. Over there in England, is there, I'll use the word respect, is there much respect for the Aussies down here in terms of how we support the Premier League and those who have been, you know, lucky enough to go and play in it?
Yeah, I think there's always respect for a fan base, especially when you've got, say, for instance, if you've got an Aussie player or you've got a lot of affiliation with a club, the players, you know, they have a lot of respect for fans, and especially when I know loads of my friends or my family's friends that have moved out there, and they're massive football fans, and you can tell, and you know, you can always. You can always support or feel part of a football club or a fan base when you've had that much support for your career.
Of course, and obviously having such a huge fan base for the Premier League as well. No doubt, we've seen that you've done plenty of interview, and we've read a few little things about some of the heroes that you had growing up, and you specifically named out five of them. I don't know if you can reel them off the top of your head, but I guess who were your heroes growing up as a young lad, and who did you sort of look to for footballing inspiration?
I think my first sort of, like when I was growing up, the first sort of, I had two sort of people that I would sort of looked up to, I suppose. The first one was Gary Lineker, because just at that time, he was doing the 48 goals for England. I think he was like second top scorer. He was that sort of era that it was all about goal scoring, and he was that person. And then after that was Ryan Giggs. And, you know, I was lucky enough that I was on the similar sort of, well, same position as him. And growing up, I used to love watching him play. I used to have a lot of, VHS now. Of videos watching him, you know, the way he played, his skills, the way he's adapted his sort of career, I suppose, the way he plays, the positional, everything. And it was just incredible for me to be able to watch that and learn from it, and obviously take bits and pieces that his game that I could use, and obviously then try and adapt my game. But I was very fortunate enough that, you know, I've then gone on and played against him quite a few times. So it was like a real sort of, like, I don't even know what to say. It was like a, you know, meeting your sort of, your growing up hero, your idol, I suppose.
What sort of got you into watching those guys in the first place? How did you fall in love with the game? Was it, you know, family influences, or did you just get a ball for, you know, your first birthday? There's a lot of stories like that, or anything unique?
I wouldn't say unique as such. I mean, this is a little fact for you. Both my parents were both England number one table tennis players, so it wasn't something that they were like, right. They weren't like, oh, you need to go into table tennis. They were like, whatever you wanted to do. And I've got an older brother, and he was mad into football as well. So it just sort of happened that sort of way. And because my mum and dad were like, it's work were quite sporty background, they just helped me and put me into all different things. But football was like always going to be my main thing. But I did football, swimming, athletics, cross country, every single sport under the sun. I used to love doing it. And then it was only up until when I, you know, probably about 15 that I sort of really was like, no, football's always going to be the one that was going to be the winner. And that's what I then sort of concentrated on.
Well, I actually do fancy myself as a bit of a table tennis champion. I'm sort of the local hero when it comes to table tennis down here in Australia.
Okay.
So if I'm ever around your area, I'll have to give you a game.
Yeah.
but I guess on a more serious note, getting stuck into your actual career, you came through the system at Millwall, of course, and combination of Millwall and Gilliam. And with that being said, what's it like going through the process of coming through and graduating an academy, but then also the tough process of the flip side of also being released as well?
Yeah, I think for me as a kid, you're 16 years old and you get told you're not good enough is a massive sort of kick in the teeth, and it's hard to take because you build yourself up. Everything's so important when you're that age. And when I was at Millwall, I was there for 7 years, and then to get told at the end of it, we're not offering you a youth team contract, and that was it. I was gutted, but luckily enough, I went straight to Gillingham. The scout took me straight there, and to be honest, I was useless on trial, but luckily they took a chance, and as soon as I got offered the contract and I signed, something switched in me, and that was it. I hit the ground running at Gillingham, and I was playing in the first team in my second year as a youth team at 17. So it was just a sort of something just switched in me, and the confidence and everything grew, and it was just a dream start.
Well, you talk about the confidence, and at 16 being let go by Millwall, obviously not an experience almost anybody wants to have. But did you spoke about how you were athlete and all that sort of stuff, and most people that we've had on this pod that have played professional sport, funny enough, talk about how they almost had a choice of what sport they wanted to play. But did you notice before, when you were in your 13, 14, that you were just better than all your mates, regardless of your mates at the Millwall Academy, but like just your other, we'll call them average mates. Did you just realize that, I know I'm a level above these guys? And then when you talk about gaining that confidence later in your childhood, was that sort of the key?
Yeah, I think if you'd ask any of my mates, I was always that guy. I used to win the football, the swimming, the athletics, the cross country. I was always that guy. And the thing is, I absolutely loved it. I was so competitive and I worked hard, and I made sure that I was the best, because that's what I wanted to be. So even from an earlier age, I always wanted to win. I always wanted to be the best and compete. And I loved that competition. So it's quite easy for me to sort of carry that on into the team game in football.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And of course, like you just mentioned, the confidence that you had as a young kid, and I think over every young player's career, there are certain things that sort of amplify that confidence, but also tear it down. And we've spoken to a few athletes who have had some injury problems, and of course, that's a huge factor in a lot of players' careers. And unfortunately, you're in the position where, due to injuries later in your career, that's sort of how maybe your time finished up at Norwich. And I guess between 2015 and 2018, and after, obviously you had a few long-term injuries with both your knee and your ankle, you sort of just played 10 first-team games. We actually went and figured out that you had 699 days either injured or recovering during that time. So as a player, how do you take the confidence that you have going through your career and then being put in a position where you face setback after setback? How does your mindset sort of change towards the game? And I guess, what are the challenges that you face as well?
I mean, that is a horrible stat, isn't it?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it in a bad way. It was no way a dig, but
it's fine. I've said this many a time before, that period at Norwich, because I went there, my injuries, I hadn't really had too many long term injuries from my whole sort of career, really, and then I hit 30, and I was at Norwich, and I went in for a tackle with Yaya Toure and he broke me. A really silly idea to go into a tackle with him anyway. But I did my medial so I rested it, got myself back playing in the correct time, which was probably just about 8 to 10 weeks. Played the rest of the season and my knee was killing me. And I was I can't carry on like this. And I was it'll get better. Had all these scans, had injections all through the season, all through the summer. Come back pre-season, I was it's still so sore. And I was I can't carry on. So I then had surgery. When they opened me up, they were your medial's not attached properly. I was brilliant. So I've played pretty much 6 months of the season with my medial not attached properly. And then I got myself back fit, got my first training session with the team, cut inside, had a shot. Someone flew out and blocked the shot and smashed my ankle. And I hurt my ankle and I was like, nah, I'm, you know, it's fine. It's my first training session back. I'm carrying on. Anyway, got worse and worse and worse and worse. I had more injections, more scans. The season was sort of petering out. The manager got sacked. We changed it over. No one, it was all a bit of a weird sort of end to the season and I wasn't involved. And then I had more injections through the summer. Come back, ankle was in bits, had surgery, and they found that my cartilage wasn't attached either, but they couldn't pick this up on the scan. So I woke up from my operation thinking I was going to be a couple of weeks, and it ended up being 8 months because I had a microfracture in my ankle, and it was just a disaster. And then getting back from that, I picked up IT band friction syndrome, which I had to have a clean out op from that. Which just because my surgery was all on my right hand side and it just changed my biomechanics a little bit. And mentally it was absolutely the hardest part of my whole life. I'd say that them 3-4 years with my family, with my wife, really, I was very lucky that in that spell, me and my wife had our first child, because it was, I mean, you know, I've said this before in interviews, I'm not using this lightly, you know, so I was in pain every single day. I couldn't walk properly with my ankle, and I used to come home from training and just, I'd be up in Norwich on my own at the time and just bawl my eyes out. It was incredibly difficult. But I'm lucky that I've got a really good family and group of friends and obviously my teammates at the time. I used to just have that never give up attitude that I was going to get back fit. You know, I had surgeons and people tell me that you're probably going to have to knock it on the head. And I was like, no chance. I'm carrying on. And, you know, it did take me a while. And there was some very, very dark days. But I always knew that I wasn't going to go out like that. If I was going to have to stop, it was going to be my decision. And it wasn't going to be due to anything else, and I worked and worked and worked, and I gave it absolutely everything, and I'm here now, and I'm still able to play, and I played last year, this season, even though it's sort of finished now, but I worked myself back, and I was just determined to get myself there, because like I said, mentally I wasn't going to let it happen to me, but it was the hardest couple of years of my life for sure.
Well, not that, like, you'd say that some injuries are, you know, all right and some others aren't, but if my maths is correct, it means this, all these sort of problems started happening around the age of 28, if I'm correct. Does it help during the recovery and even now, knowing that sort of up until that point, you had an unbelievable career with Wolves and West Ham, in that, like, you sort of, you know, if worst case scenario came about, at least you knew that you made it at the top level? Because to be honest, your time at Wolves was definitely the most successful part of your career. Absolutely flying, got promotion, and won the Player of the Year following a few years later. So, did you often think back to those times in a positive light, or was it even more of a hindrance?
Yeah, like everyone used to say that to me at the time, but for me, I didn't want to look back. I always wanted to look forward. I never sort of wanted to sort of go back and go, oh yeah, I did that. I did that really well. I wanted to, like, right, the next game, I needed to get prepared for the next game. I needed to get myself fit for the next season or whatever it was. I wanted to, when I'd finished my career and was sat on the sofa, then I could look back and go, actually, yeah, what a career I've had. But at the time, I didn't want to sit back on my laurels and just be like, oh yeah, I've actually done really well. I don't need to worry about the next couple of years. It wasn't like that for me at all. I was always striving for the next thing. And then, don't get me wrong, in a few years' time, and when my kids are a little bit older, I'll be like, do you remember? Look at this. I used to play here. Look, there's my England cap, you know, all of that. But, you know, while I was in it, I was never looking back. I was always trying to focus and get myself looking forward.
And if anything, that's probably a testament to your competitive nature and obviously your professionalism as an athlete, that no matter how long you can spend on the sidelines, your love for the game always outweighs whatever pain you go through on the sidelines. And I guess if we look at your, I guess, on-field career rather than focusing on your injury and I guess the time that you spent out, obviously, as Damon said, in our opinion, probably your most successful period was with the Wolves. And in 2008, 2009, you guys got promotion to the Premier League. Obviously, you guys were crowned champions. How was that season leading up as you guys got to become champions? How do you rank that, I guess, in the over the course of your career? Because obviously you made it to the Premier League, but becoming champions in the championship as well is obviously a huge achievement in itself.
I think really that season, I think you can't. When you're successful, it's enjoyable. So winning the league and winning games, you know, week in, week out is enjoyable. And I'd say that season was my most enjoyable time with a squad of players and a team. I think that was just an incredible season. I don't think you don't get many of them anywhere you are. You know, we missed out on the playoffs by one goal the season before. And we'd got back into that pre-season and you could just have a feel for it. Like in pre-season, the squad was better. We'd added a few more players. Everyone had that confidence about them. There was another year that all of the players were together from the previous season. I think you then just work out how the team works, how the team plays. The manager was fantastic, Mick McCarthy. He had incredible staff with him. Terry Connor, his assistant, used to take loads of the players out before training in the morning to do work on extra bits and pieces. And it just the whole blend of players and older players. There was a few, like Jody Craddock was a huge part of the team. And then you had all of the youngsters that we'd never played in the Premier League. So we all had that drive and determination that we wanted to get there. So it just flew. For us, we used to play just attacking football. We had two wingers, myself and Kites on the wings. We had two centre forwards, and we used to just get the ball wide, get the ball in the box, and try and score goals. And that was how we played for the full season, and it just worked for us. We used to just sometimes we used to bulldoze teams. Other times we were just having not a scrap, but like a bit more of a, well, if you score, we're going to score two. That sort of a game. You know, it was just really enjoyable, and you know, we blasted the league and won it with ease at the end, and it was just an incredible experience.
I bet. And it's one thing to, you know, do so well in the championship, but there's no beating around the bush that when it comes to England call-ups, there's pretty much only eyes on the Premier League, and you got there. Of course, as you said, and you did make an appearance for England, and it's safe to say you probably have that as your number one accomplishment, and rightly so. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? Like, how's the process of being called up, and then, you know, how was it?
I'd have to say that's the pinnacle of anyone's career to play for the country, and I'm delighted that I was able to have my game was at Wembley in front of 85,000 fans, all my family, all my friends. You know, there's so many supporters that from Wolves, from West Ham, from Gillingham, anyone, they always just say, oh yeah, I was at that game. So it's a real treasure that mine was at Wembley. So I'm delighted with that. The process, I remember we played Aston Villa away in a derby. It was like the early kickoff on the Saturday. So we played, we won 1-0 and I scored, and it was like fantastic. And then because it was the early kickoff, I went back home. So I traveled back down south. And then I was going to go out with all my mates on that Saturday night. And then on the Sunday, I went back up to Wolves, just got through the door in my kitchen. It was probably about 6 o'clock in the evening. And I then get a text message, and it was like from the FA saying, "Oh, you've been selected for the England squad." And I was like, "Wow. No, that's got to be a wind up. Like, you can't just get a text message." And then a couple of minutes later, I get a phone call, and it was someone from the FA again saying, "Look, no, it's not a wind up. You have been selected. I've just given you a quick heads up. So if you want to tell a few people, you've probably got about half an hour before it gets released on Sky Sports News." I was like, wow, like this is absolutely incredible. And then sure enough, you then get like all the details pop through about, you know, someone's going to come and pick you up the next day because you've got to go to, then you've got 2 week sort of like training camp where there's two games. And it was just a bit of a blur. It was crazy. I mean, the funniest part of it was once I got told, and I was like, me and my wife were absolutely obviously buzzing. She was like trying to call. She was calling her parents. I was calling my mum and dad. I was calling my brother. And I was speaking to everyone. And I just couldn't get hold of my mum and dad. And I was calling that mobile. I was calling my dad's mobile. I was calling the house phone. And I was like, I just can't. Like, where are they? So I took a punt that they were up this restaurant that was near them. So I called the actual restaurant. I called the landline on the restaurant. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, my mum and dad there. And they were like, yeah, yeah, they are. Like, oh, any chance you could put them on the phone? So I had to tell them, and they're in this Indian restaurant up the road. So, yeah, so they enjoyed a couple of drinks that night.
Obviously, it's not quite the same when you get called up. And obviously, you know, we haven't had the privilege of being able to play at an international level. But what's it like when you actually pull on the tracksuit for the first time that you get given? Is it just a really surreal moment that you're not putting it on as a fan, you're putting it on as an England player?
Yeah, I think that I you know, the best sort of memory I suppose that I had of I was warming up, obviously in full kit apart from my shirt. Had my shirt in the dugout, and you know, you're warming up and down, running up and down, so I getting yourself ready, and I'm constantly looking back at the bench thinking, come on, please put me on, please put me on. And I remember, you know, being down near the corner flag and looking back, and now I get the hand, I was like, yeah, come back. And I'm like sprinting back to the bench to get my shirt. And then I just remember that feeling. I remember I took the jumper off and I just picked my shirt up, I looked on the back, and it's got Jarvis, you know. And I'm like, wow, this is it. Let's and go. I put it over my head, and I'm then just standing on the side of the pitch thinking, right, this is it. You know, there's that feeling of, right, I remember Jack Wilshere was coming on, I shook his hand and I ran on the pitch, and I just thought, right, that's it, I've done it. Like, no one can take this away from me. I've played for England. And then it's just like, right, once we're on the pitch, that's it, everything switches off, you know, you're in football mode, and that's it. But that moment, I remember just standing there thinking, wow, this is absolutely amazing.
Mm. Oh, I can only we can only imagine what the feeling would be like.
Goosebumps now.
Yeah, I bet. And obviously a packed Wembley as well. And like just us going back and watching the game as well, just, you know, in preparation to speak to you, it just, the crowd was going crazy, and I'm pretty sure a few players had amazing games as well. So it was pretty end to end from memory, just from watching the game back. So the atmosphere, just watching it, was amazing. And I can only imagine what it would be like pulling off the jersey for the first time and actually walking on. And with that being said as well, obviously looking at the players that you did play with, the England team at the time was absolutely stacked. It was sort of the end of, or the peak of, the golden generation really for England.
Yeah.
And what was the camp like, being in the same camp as all these EPL legends really?
Yeah, amazing. I think when I first turned up, it was like, I sort of mentioned it before, I was like, it's like being the first day back at school, because I didn't really know all of them to a degree. I played against them all loads, but I didn't know them personally. So when you sort of turn up, everyone's sort of been there before, everyone was chatting away, you know, they were at the same clubs, you know. So I just sort of walked in and I was like, yo, I don't really quite know what to do. Where do I sit? Am I sitting in someone's seat? You know, that sort of thing. But the lads were brilliant. You know, they all were real, real good guys. They all welcomed me in, and, you know, and then once you're on the training pitches, it's just business as usual. But it was a really amazing experience. And the whole team, the network was really, really good. A lot of fun and games, but a lot of concentration on the pitch as well, because you know it was Capello who was in charge, and he was a real stifler for making sure that everything was done to the T. And you know, we had to wait for everyone to be ready to go into dinner, and then we had to wait till everyone had finished till we could leave. And you know, he had his ways, and it made it it made everyone get in the right frame of mind, and that was his thing. So it was just an incredible experience.
I guess, well, that was actually going to be my next question. What was Capello like? But I feel like you sort of answered that one. But it does mean I can go on to a question that I really want to ask. And it's sort of pulling back a little bit, not just international level, but club level, any level. Other than Peter Crouch, who was the best player you reckon you ever played with?
you've been listening, yeah. What a guy. Who's the best player I've played with or against, did you say?
With. We'll go with and then with. Against.
Okay. I think if I'm going club football and not including the England team, I think it's such a difficult one. But I think the season that he had was Dimi Payet at West Ham. I mean, he was such a fantastic footballer, and what he did at West Ham that season was absolutely incredible, and he went on to do it for France as well. So I think just from a quick memory, I would say him for club football. And playing against, God, I mean, who do you pick? You know, it depends what position you're looking at. You know, you've got everyone, like Terry, Ferdinand, then you've got Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes, Giggs. I mean, it's just, yeah, the list goes on. They were just absolutely amazing players. Gareth Bale, I remember him playing in a fair few before he left. He scored an absolute worldie against us when I was at West Ham for Spurs. And everyone, there was about three men on him, and they were all diving in front of him, and he still managed to smash one in from the top corner from outside the box. It was just, just some incredible players there.
Just going back to Dimitri Payet, you obviously have had a season yourself where you've been player of the season, and no doubt that season, I think it was 15-16, but it might be wrong. I think it was a year before, perhaps, where Dimitri Payet absolutely, you know, just tore up the Premier League. From someone in the team looking at him, can you sort of tell when a player in their own mind just sort of can't put a foot wrong? You know, like players just go on these unbelievable patches of form, or, you know, sort of like turn a corner in terms of their ability. And we see it so often that, you know, some of the best players, even Gareth Bale, you mentioned, sort of, you'd have to say that he had lots of promise for a while, but sort of just one day just became a different player. I think you'd probably have to say it was that Tottenham game against Inter Milan. But it, you know, do they do anything differently, or is it sort of just a confidence thing?
Yeah, I think, like I've said, confidence is massive in football. I mean, it's massive in every industry, but with football, you know, especially the flair players, the players that you want to have on the ball that need to be scoring the goals or making assists. These players, if they're in, you know, if he stuck one into the top bins in with a free kick, and his confidence is right up, then he's in the mood for it. Then he's wanting to get on the ball all the time. Then he's trying stuff that he wouldn't normally try. And for him, you know, he was just, like you said, once you're on song and you're on a roll, you feel like you're untouchable, and everything that you do, you think you're going to score, or you're going to put that ball exactly where you want to on a free kick. It's just, you're riding the wave. You know, that's what you do. It's just, when you're in a rich vein of form like that, you just want to keep playing every game, because you know at some point it's going to come to a stop. But you just want to ride that wave, and he had that full season of just being absolutely incredible.
And like, don't discredit yourself as well. You had an amazing season that season as well, and obviously you had an amazing Premier League career as a whole. And I guess that sort of leads me to ask, and I sort of have never really asked any of the players that we've had on, and it's sort of an interesting one because you sort of experience the highs and the lows of a career, and that sort of leads me to ask, do you ever have any regrets when you look back as a player, or do you feel like your career was completely fulfilled with however much that you wanted to fill into it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because I'd say I don't have any regrets, because you can't. I don't think, like, a lot of players, you know, you could ask a lot of players and they go, oh, would you love to go back to when you were 19 and do it all over again? I would be like, no, because I wouldn't want to change anything, because that's what happened to me. That was my career. I can't change that. I don't want to change that. I worked too hard to get where I was to start with. And, you know, don't get me wrong, if I could change not going into a tackle with Yaya Toure, that's probably what started my whole thing off, then I probably would. But, you know, it's made me a better person, a stronger mentally. You know, you have to go through these things. And so I don't have any regrets. I think, I would change a few things if nothing would change of the outcomes, I suppose, because you have to believe in yourself, and you have to be mentally strong, and, you know, that's hard. You don't get taught that. That's something you have to deal with and learn on the job. And as I said, I've come through it, and I'm out the other end, and I feel a lot better in myself, a lot stronger mentally, physically, and I absolutely love football, and I still love it, and I'm going to continue to play as long as I possibly can.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think every one of our listeners will 100% be able to, you know, somewhat relate to that. It's just funny how, despite the challenges we all face, football tends to be the thing that either gives us an escape or, you know, puts us back to where we need to be. So relate more.
No, I was going to say, I mean, there's plenty of times in the last couple of years my wife's been like, just stop, you know, there's no point carrying on. Just, you know, you just stop. It's you know, you're making yourself go through all of this every single day when you don't need to. You could just stop and, you know, do something else. And I was just like, I just couldn't do that. Like, I love the feeling of playing football. I work too hard to stop, and I would miss it too much. So that is why, another reason why you just want to carry on and keep playing for as long as you can.
Absolutely. This is sort of the last little bit of the chat where we get into some quirky questions, and our listeners will know exactly what we're talking about. So some will be weird, some will be funny, some will be just crap. Okay. But we do have to give them all a go.
Okay.
And we have, well, this one's specific to you. We usually start the same way with the quirky questions every time, but I'm going to do a little bit differently today. Are you a FIFA man at all? Because I'm going to be honest with you, your FIFA 13 card was absolutely next level. So, one, did you ever play FIFA, and did you ever use yourself? Because that 91 pace was lethal.
I'm going to have to say I'm not a massive computer guy, so I didn't really play. But don't get me wrong, if it was Football Manager and I had that, then I would have definitely bought myself. No problem at all.
I mean, that's exactly what we want to hear. and just getting to the next one, something that I love to ask, because it's always really interesting, and just to see from a player's perspective about who they would pick, and that is, Matt, could you give us your ideal Premier League five-a-side team? Sure. And of course you can pick anyone you want, but we would love it if it was current players, and you sort of have to stick a goalie in there as well.
Okay, cool. That's difficult. Current players. Okay. I think I'd probably have to go, oh, that's so difficult already. I thought I was going to go start at the strikers, because I was just about to go Harry Kane. I'll put him straight in. But then I think I'd have to go Harry Kane or Aguero. I think I'd have to go Aguero, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a controversial one straight from the start. and then, I think you'd have to go Alisson, wouldn't you, for goalkeeper? Just if you're playing fiver, you need him to come out with his feet and play a bit. Mm-hmm. Centre halves, or Yeah, I'd have to go centre half. I don't really know who you'd go. Oh, Van Dijk. There you go. Easy. Van
Just Dijk. Default option.
Yeah, yeah. Van Dijk, centre. Poor. Difficult. Who would I have?
It's always a hard one because five aside, it's almost not comparable to to just the normal game. And it's hard because if you look at a five-a-side team, you need so much more than just your position to play well. So you got to sort of
You need your holding midfielder to stay and to be able to sweep up everything. So you'd probably go for someone like Kante. Maybe.
Nice.
It would be class.
So I think you've got one more to go.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna have to be someone like in the midfield, or I'd probably have to go, like, if my mate's listening, I'll probably have to go with James Maddison, because he'll be some player. Well, I mean, he already is some player, but if he carries on, he could be something incredible. So I'll chuck him in there and he'll be buzzing.
you're probably one of the first guests we've had on that hasn't picked Kevin De Bruyne in midfield. And this isn't a criticism. I genuinely am happy that this is the case because, look, he's probably the best player in the Premier League, if not at least second. Yeah. But one of his strongest qualities is that, you know, 60-degree sort of cross that he can do without looking at the goal face. But what use is that in five-a-side? So I'm glad that you haven't put him in. I'm sick of people assuming he'll be good.
Yeah, I might have to tell Meadows. I might have to put him on the bench for De Bruyne, but I'm not. I'm going to keep him.
Alrighty. Next up is if you could have a sit-down dinner with one current Premier League player, who would it be and why? Perhaps, you know, maybe giving them a bit of advice, anything like that.
This is definitely the hardest one we ever ask.
There's so many different sort of ideas. I was thinking, because I could easily just pick Maddus because he would show me some night after dinner as well. That's such a difficult question.
we might switch it around. Make it a little bit easier. If we were to go, so if you were a player who, you know, obviously you went through the Premier League, but if you were a youngster coming through, who would you want to have dinner with? For example, as a young Wolves player or a young West Ham player, who was the guy that you would say, I would want to have a sit-down dinner with him because he could really give me some of, you know,
I'll tell you what, I will go. When I was at Wolves, the fitness coach was a guy called Tony Daly, who was an absolute legend and played for England. And he was a wide player, exactly the same as me. Played on the left, was more right-footed, had unbelievable pace. And he done wonders for my career as well, because I used to be able to talk to him all the time about different things. And it was like having that person that I could sit at lunch with and go through different bits, and he would help me. So I will go with him because he was a massive part to me learning at Wolves as well.
I like it. Sure. Very nice. And sort of just brings me to the next one. And you mentioned Maddison and a night out as well. But I have to ask, is surely as an England player, you would have been out with the England camp. Obviously, you made the Euro qualifiers squad, and surely you guys, you know, once you got there, you would have had a few massive nights out, or even as a player when you got promoted. So with that being said, what's your most outrageous night that you've ever sort of had? Two parts, with your club teammates and also your England teammates.
Okay. Depends how far I can go with this.
There's no legal issues that we know of.
Keeping in mind, we do advertise as a strictly over 18 pod. I mean, not really,
I never went out on a night out with the England boys. So that's that one after the thing. But I remember, I just see one sort of it's not outrageous, but it was just a funny story. There's two parts to it. When I was at Wolves, we went out and we're all in this club, and one of the younger lads that had only just, he was only just 18, so it was his first sort of night out with us lot. One of the lads called Graham Stack, he was a goalkeeper, he's at Watford now as the goalkeeper coach. He said to the young kid, he was like, right, I'm going to give you £1, you need to hide it, I'm going to come back in a few minutes, and if I can't find it, I'll give you 20 quid. And the kid was buzzing, he was like, right, no problem. And he got this pound and swallowed it, put it in his mouth and swallowed it. And Stacky come back, and he was like putting his hands all over his face, all over his like head, everywhere, like patting him down. It took about a couple of minutes. He goes, oh, like, fair play. There you go. He gave him 20 quid. And the guy's face was absolutely buzzing. He was like, oh, I've got 20 quid here. And when he turned around, Stacky, while he went away, went outside of the club, got his hands on all of the exhaust pipes. So it was totally black, like his hands were covered. Come back in, and he was putting it all over his face, like everywhere. And obviously he didn't know. And then about a couple of minutes later, he's got this 20 quid, he's absolutely buzzing, and a bouncer's come over and gone, oi, you need to go and wash your face. And he's gone to the toilet, and he's absolutely covered head to toe. And it was, yeah, it was funny. It was just a funny sort of thing to get him in there first sort of night. So that was one little thing that happened.
Sure, that's definitely a good one. And last one, this one I feel like might be even more difficult than the dinner one. So if you want to give it a pass, that'll be all right. Who is the most famous person you have in your phone contacts book at the moment? And I've got a funny feeling like we're going to have some massive names here. Don't worry, you don't have to call them or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I've got quite a lot of the football lads, which is, you know, like a lot of the England boys, all of them. Martin Tyler is always a good one from Sky.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't know who else I would sort of say. I must have something weird and wonderful. But trying to think who else I could have.
Martin Tyler's tough to top, to be honest.
Yeah, Martin Tyler's a good one, yeah. I mean, I've got a few of the Sky people and the BT people. But, yeah, Martin Tyler's a very good one. Everyone knows him.
Yeah. Everyone.
Well, with that being said, do you ever, when you sort of get the call up or you meet someone that is high profile, do you ever head back to your club, your respective club that you were at the time, and just ever like sort of flex it a little bit and be like, oh, sorry, guys, I'm just on the phone to Frank Lampard or something like that, just to sort of rub it into the boys.
Yeah, not really. I mean, it has probably happened, I'm sure, but I wouldn't say I'm that sort of guy, but I'm sure it probably has happened in the past.
Awesome. Well, I think that pretty much brings our time to a close. I know we've kept you for a little bit longer than what we said we would. So, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. As we introduce you, it has been, honestly, this is like pot of the gold at the end of the rainbow. It is just an absolute privilege for us to speak to an England international, let alone an EPL player, and obviously superstar as yourself. So,
and a FIFA 13 icon, don't forget that.
And a FIFA 13 icon as well. So with that being said, Matt, thank you so much again. I'm sure all our listeners are absolutely loving this, and thank you. So yeah, and hopefully we can speak to you again in the near future, maybe come season end or hopefully next season as well.
Yeah, definitely, that'd be great. Thank you very much for having me, and I'm glad. I hope you weren't up too early, and I'm going to bed.
Good stuff.
Cheers, Matt. See ya.
Top man. Cheers.
Well, Woodrow, I say this every bloody time we finish up an interview, but it's an absolute privilege to have another guest on the nightclub, and you know, I don't really know what else to say other than I hope people bloody enjoyed it.
Oh, look, that's probably one of the most insightful episodes I think we've done, Damo, and what a pleasure to have it on our 50th ep, one of the things that really struck me was you could really feel the emotion that he had towards his England cap. And I know he said that he still gave him shivers, even though when he was talking to us about coming on for Jack Wilshere. And I tell you what an experience, honestly, to pull on your national team and a team like England as well, especially in the England's golden generation when they had, you know, some of the best squads in the world in terms of quality and EPL talent. Gee whiz, you know, that would have been just such an experience. And playing under Fabio Capello, playing with the likes of Gerard, Lampard, Scholes, just the works, mate. It would have been such a privilege.
100%, and it's going to be something that he gets to live with for the rest of his life, knowing that he played with, not just for England, and I think there's going to be players who play more games for England, but not during that era. And I mean, it's a bit dodgy to say, but in a way, one game during that era is sort of the equivalent to, say, 10 in another. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, if you could have broke into that squad during the time, I reckon that just goes to show how good of a player you are.
I feel as if players that get, you know, consistent caps for a national team might not recognise the absolute significance and, I guess, the importance of it. For example, compared to someone like Matt, who has got the single cap, and for him, that is the pinnacle of his career.
You can tell he cherishes it.
Yeah, of course. And I think that's something that goes out to a lot of players that are lucky enough to get consistent caps for their national team is, you know, it is just such a privilege. It really is to pull on and represent that badge. Damo, let's move on, because not only is this a huge episode because it's episode 50 and we've got Matt Jarvis, the England international, but the EPL is back this weekend, isn't it?
Whoop! It is freaking back, dude. And honestly, like, I've spoken about this quite a bit during isolation, but gee whiz, for the sanity of football fans, we needed this. We really did. And I've loved the Bundesliga to death, but actually, no, I'm not going to lie. I haven't loved it to death. It's not the Premier League. And I think this is why I do a Premier League show and not a Bundesliga show or any other football league show, is because the Premier League offers something that no other one has. And I couldn't even tell you what it is. It just, it attracts me. It attracts us, Woodra. And I needed it back. Otherwise, I was about to, you know, just go absolutely nuts. I couldn't handle not waking up at 3 a.m. anymore. It wasn't good for my health that I wasn't doing it. So,
geez, mate, you're starting to sound like you on a night out, really. Just absolute desperation. But yes, Damo, I'll cut you off there. Let's get stuck straight into it. So the first game to kick us off is actually Aston Villa versus Sheffield, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, but the second last game from the final round, or the round before COVID. So
it was originally rescheduled from a different match week, yeah. That's all.
Exactly. And then probably the headliner of this weekend would be Man City versus Arsenal. That is 5:15 Thursday morning. I'm working 7 a.m. Count me in. Schedule me in. I'm late to work. I'm watching that game.
Mate, surely the whole workplace is going to be late and a bit scratchy that morning. I mean, you can't be missing this. And, you know, we've even got a few Arsenal fans that we're mates with, Woodrow. And, you know, they've pretty much just said, you know, we've waited 3 months for Premier League football to be back, and we're going to cop a spanking from the citizens at the Etihad. And look, it's probably a fair assessment of what might happen, especially if you talk about how Arsenal went in their practice game against Brentford, I believe, where they lost 3-2. So it'll be interesting to see how they go up against Aguero and co. But Woodrow, that would complete the games that they need to catch up on, because there's 92 in total, which leaves 90 now. 9 rounds to go, 90 games. After starting this weekend, and it kicks off with Norwich versus Southampton. And look, this one, Norwich are pretty much dead and buried. You'd say that? Would you say that?
I'd say so. And Southampton really hanging on by the skin of their teeth as well. If it wasn't for Danny Ings doing things, you could probably excuse them for being in the bottom three, really.
100%. And then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer takes on the man he took over from, and that's Jose Mourinho, and that'll be an absolute massive one. Of course, Dele Alli set to miss due to breaching isolation rules or lockdown rules, so that's massive for that game. But I think Tottenham really, really are going to benefit the most from this lockdown. You think about the players they were missing as they went into as the coronavirus hit. They were without Harry Kane. They were without Son. They were a basket case defensively. They couldn't string two or three good games together. So I think the break benefits Tottenham the most. So their sort of European run, well, attempt at making the Champions League was pretty much dead and buried until this hit. So I think they're back in it, and they go in favourites against this United team for mine. And it'll be really interesting to see how this goes. But then, Woodrow, we've got a few other ones. Watford looking lively, of course, before that the season halted. It's really hard to predict any sort of solid winner or loser because of the unknown of how teams have gone about the last 3 months.
And completely. And to cap off the round, we've got a Merseyside derby, Everton versus Liverpool, which is really interesting because I know there's been a lot of conjecture about where this is actually going to be played. And it's no longer a neutral ground. But just to quickly kick on, Norwich versus Southampton is going to be set to be the highest rated and watched EPL game in history because it is back. It is the first one that is free to air on Sky. And Damo, I think it's fair to say that everyone's going to be salivating to get back into the EPL.
100%. And you know what else the people are salivating for, Woodrow? It's what they've been waiting for months and months and months.
Here we go.
And get ready, Woodrow. Here it is. It is time for Damo's Dollars.
Show me the money.
I actually have missed that tune so much. We're back, Woodrow. And this one was really interesting when I was sort of looking through, you know, deciding on the multi of the week. And it hit me after I decided the four games I was going to be looking at. I've already done this round before we went into lockdown. So I went into the archives and found that by chance, I picked exactly the same four games to put a bet on as I did last time.
What a coincidence.
The only difference is that there's one change in result. So to all those people who follow Damo's Dollars religiously and have got that bet pending, I suggest you put this one on as well to cut your losses if something goes wrong, which might happen due to, you know, the 3 month break we've been on. And the first game I'm looking at is Sheffield United to beat Newcastle at $2.25. And this is the one that I've changed. I originally had this as a draw, but I think all the off-field stuff at Newcastle has put their mind elsewhere during this break. That's my theory, at least. Mm-hmm. And look, Sheffield picked up 10 points in the last four games. They haven't conceded more than one goal in a game since a 2-0 loss to Liverpool at the start of the year. I mean, you just cannot see Sheffield losing this. But on the other hand, Newcastle are also sitting on 35 points in 13th. They really only need two or three wins, or say two, to guarantee safety. I'm not sure they're going to be busting too much of a gut over the next 9 rounds, considering what could potentially be happening to that club in the off-season. So I think Sheffield have got bigger fish to fry than Newcastle, and they'll dispatch them quite easily, to be honest, the more I've thought about it.
Damo goes bang.
Next up.
Leg one.
Damo goes bang, exactly. Next up is Brighton versus Arsenal. And now this one, I didn't have Arsenal winning last time, and I don't have them winning again. I think a draw between these two is the way to go about it. The reverse fixture last time, I don't know if you remember this one, Woody, but Arsenal went down 2-1 at home. And that was probably the lowest point for Unai Emery. It was just a debacle. Speaking of Aaron Moy earlier in the show, he tore them a new arsehole, that one. So, Arsenal also having a away trip to Man City, which we just spoke about days earlier. I'm not sure this team travels well as is. They got two away games in a row. I don't know. And Brighton have only lost four games at home all season. I can't see Brighton losing. So, I'm going to draw between these two at $3.40. Insane value.
You're right, Damo. And anyone under 18, please cover your ears right now. But Aaron Moy, absolutely, Johnny singed Arsenal back then. So, Damo, if you please continue with the third leg of Damo's Dollars.
This one is a real quick one. Chelsea to beat Villa at $1.50. $1.50 for mine is crazy odds. At the start, before the virus hit and this game was expected to be played, Chelsea were $1.62. Now, they're playing away at Villa Park, yeah? But think about it. When the $1.62 was around, this was with crowds. They've shortened by just 12 cents with no crowds. Chelsea, no intimidation factor at all at Villa Park. You know, Woodrow, I often talk about how Villa Park is somewhere where I really want to go because all I hear is good stuff about their atmosphere. It's going to be nowhere on this particular day. Chelsea can dispatch them. $1.50, that's insane value. Oofed. That Chelsea aren't losing this.
Oofed.
No way they're losing this. And lastly, I got Liverpool to beat Everton. And You know, I have written here, I've actually got my quote from 3 months ago. I said, given the current run of form for Liverpool and the mini resurgence from Everton, it could be understandable if some uneducated people think Everton are a chance here. Now, this all changes. Form goes out the window. There is no way Liverpool are not going to beat Everton on the weekend. I mean, they've just got so much to play for. Imagine, like, I don't care what any Liverpool fan says. They'll be burning inside if they win the title but lose to Everton in the same week. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They're going to dispatch them.
Mate, is that a, with that's absolute not even, ease. That's not even an option, mate. Liverpool need to win and City need to lose. Just like your English skills, your math skills are out of the window here. What are you doing?
I said in the same week, mate. I said in the same week. So if they win the following weekend, technically it counts in the same 7-day period. All right. So just give me a second.
All right. Okay, champion.
And it's worth noting, Liverpool haven't lost to Everton in like 10 years. There's absolutely no chance. And also, Everton got absolutely demolished in their last game against Chelsea 4-0. There's no chance Everton... any chance of making Europe now, it's over. Liverpool are going to win at $1.57. So basically, combined odds of $18.01. So we'll just say $18. Chuck a tenner on it. You're guaranteed to get $180 back. Worth noting, the original multi from prior to coronavirus had your returning of $192. So $12 less value, but I like this more. So, you know, for those who already put the punt on, put this one on as well. Both might come off. You never know.
Look, Damo, like you said, you're absolutely guaranteed to get back $180 if you win, but you're not guaranteed to win. So, disclaimer, we take no legal representation for anyone that has failed on Damo's dollars tips. And it, please, if you're over 18, bet responsibly.
Yeah, and if you're not over 18, you probably shouldn't have listened to this podcast because I don't think we've swore or talked about some real ordinary stuff as much as this episode. So to the first-time listeners listening, it's not usually like this. It's probably a little bit more sensible and use more analysis and rational thinking. But in this one, we're just too pumped. We're running off pure emotion in this one. Mudra, I need to get out of here because I'm ready for football. Mm-hmm. Let's go do this, man. We're about to go watch football. Let's do it, mate.
And before that, let's hop on the pro clubs and have an absolute sesh one.
Exactly. And Woodra, if they want to find us on the Insta, where can they find us?
You can find us at Premier League Nightclub on the Insta. And Damon, where can you find us on the Twitter?
You can find us on the Twitter at PL Nightclub. And it's also worth mentioning our competition that we got running June 20th. So this episode's coming out on the 16th or 17th. You got 3 days to retweet and follow us on Twitter, and a Premier League home kit could be yours if you are the lucky winner. So make sure you get on that. Winner announced probably at halftime or something of the Norwich game, something like that. I'll sort of figure it out on the day, but you just got to get on that. Got to get on it. But yeah, also search us on the Facebook. But yeah, Woodrow, I reckon we're cooked here. We're done.
We're done. Oh, we've nailed this one in the coffin. We have. It's huge episode. Ep 50.
It's over.
Ep 50 down the drain, lock and loaded, sealed and delivered.
Sweet. Huge thank you to everyone listening. Huge thank you to Matt Jarvis. Make sure you chuck us a follow on, you know, wherever you listen to us on your podcast, subscribe, whatever it is. I've completely messed this up. Would you take us out? I'm out of here.
Damo, you've absolutely mangled that one. And guys, thank you very much for tuning in and booging at the Premier League Nightclub. We'll catch you next week.